Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth. B-F-F-T. From the PAC West Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
Man, we're in the 5 o'clock hour already. We're having fun on the show. Anna has left the studio, which means we're going to talk sports again. Nick Aliotti, PAC-12 Network analyst, former University of Oregon defensive coordinator, man of the world. He's a grandpa. He's a father. He's a husband. The Italian stallion himself joining us now. How you doing?
I'm doing great, John. How about yourself? And I will say this. Thanks for the introduction. Anna's getting pretty good at this sports stuff. She's getting better and better. She is.
Pretty soon, they're going to just remove my chair from the studio, and then it'll be Anna, and, I'll be doing all the technical stuff. And, but I'm okay with that. Hey, I appreciate you making time. I want to talk about the scrimmage a little bit, football in general. It's never too early to talk football, but you were on the broadcast for the spring game, and, what were your takeaways? Like, first things that you thought as you watched Oregon scrimmage?
Well, a couple of takeaways. I was really excited about the crowd. I don't know the exact number, but they had a good crowd. We'll just say that, at least probably 25,000-30,000. I thought that the scrimmage, it was a fun game. A lot of times they're just kind of another practice, but this was it was a fun game to broadcast and be a part of. I thought there were a lot of good things that happened, and then obviously some bad things. Quarterback, the question everybody's, the big thing everybody wants to know, who's going to be the quarterback? Well, I think that there's not a great separation. I will say that. Not a great separation between the three. But if I'm looking at that first game at Georgia, I think Nick's did some really good things, throwing the ball down the field, and then obviously had the one throw that he forced into coverage. And the guy that nobody talks about that I think had a really good game was Jay Butterfield. Jay Butterfield might not be as elusive as the other guy, other quarterbacks, as far as foot speed and escapability, but last I checked, the quarterback most of the time throws the ball, and he throws it very well. So, they've been touting Nix and Thompson, and Butterfield hasn't getting much run as far as publicly. I don't know what's happening inside the building, but they still have some analysis to be done because it's still close, but I think going to Georgia that they'll go with the veteran Nix, who's played in that league and has some experience.
If you had to rank the three quarterbacks just on the spring game performance, just on what you saw, give me your 1, 2, 3.
Okay. Now, we're making that clear, and I appreciate the question because it's a good question. They've had 14, 15 practices. You and I had one eyeball during the spring game. Right now, it's very close with Nix in front. This is Nick Aliotti's opinion.
Yep.
Butterfield second and Ty Thompson third. How I would rank them.
1, 2, 3. Not surprised by that. I thought Butterfield and Thompson both, both guys made mistakes but also made plays. When I see a scrimmage like that, I'm focused on the offense, but I left the stadium and as I was driving home on I-5, I got to thinking about the defense. Is it possible that scrimmage was geared towards the offense to do some things like the defense couldn't touch the quarterback, other stuff like that? You're a D coordinator. What did you see on defense?
Okay. Well, first of all, I'm going to say it's always easier. That's the other thing that we weren't be able to evaluate clearly, John and the audience there. when the quarterback can sit in the pocket and there's people around him and they know, and you know as a quarterback you can't get touched or hit, it's a lot easier to step in and make a throw. So some of those throws down the field sometimes, being a defensive guy, the quarterback would have got touched or hit, and maybe those throws wouldn't have been as good. That being said, I thought the defense started off very slow. The green and the yellow team had 35 points between them in the first 18 minutes, real close to that. It might have been 18 and change. But then I did notice that when Oregon defensively, Tosh Lapoy, started employing more of a five- and six-man rush and playing man coverage, as witnessed from about the middle of the second quarter to the end of the game, there was very few completions and a lot of pressure on the quarterback. So I thought the defense showed well, particularly the second half of that game, and it looks like, at least in that game, pressure and tight man coverage is something they're going to do quite a bit.
I'm always interested, you know, and we'll get a chance to see them under live fire in the season, but, you know, you've been through a lot of springs as a defensive coordinator, and, you know, how difficult is it to walk in, you know, have players that, you know, aren't familiar to you, a lot of them you didn't recruit, you're trying to implement your system, you have some, you know, 15 spring practices and a spring game to get it done. Like, how challenging is that?
Very challenging, because the first thing, and you hear this word all the time, and it might be overused, but the first thing you do is come in and you try to change the bad habits or get rid of the bad habits, or unfortunately the bad actors, if there are some, the culture. You want to change the culture. And in today's world, particularly in today's coaching world, you have to treat these young men differently, because they have to know you care about them. Not like we didn't do it back then. But you have to care about them more as a person. They want to know how much you care about them first, and you have to build those relationships before you can go into the X's and O's. And then once you do that, John, then you got to start making some hard decisions on who's getting the reps and who are the better players. So, and a lot of times you move guys because you see a guy maybe could be better at this position than he was last year. Guy may not want to do that. He might want to transfer. There's all kinds of stuff that's tough to implement and done in 4 months after being somewhere, and not really, they have nobody on their staff that was there last year. I mean, nobody. Everybody's new. So it was a complete get to know each other and growing learning curve in going to learn each other, learn about each other, both as people, as coaches, and X's and O's and the whole nine yards.
Nick Aliotti with us, Pac-12 Network analyst, former Oregon defensive coordinator. The coaching staff across football are now in this era of name, image, likeness, transfer portal. You know, you always had to worry about making kids feel important, but I think that now it's probably off the charts. And what do you think of what is happening in college sports?
Well, there's a lot of people that aren't going to like what I'm going to say, but I don't like NIL in its present state. I think there has to be some kind of jurisdiction or a cap or whatever the right words might be. You can't just give unlimited money. One little example I'd give is this. You got a starting quarterback on your team that's maybe getting $10,000, and then there's some recruit that you want out there that might be getting, I'm just $100,000. I don't think that goes over well in a locker room. I don't care how you slice it. I don't think it goes over well. So I'm not an NIL fan. And I also think, I used to think, that football, being on a team, and football in particular, since we're talking football, can teach a lot of life lessons. And one of life's lessons is this. Sometimes persistence and battling through hard times and starting from the bottom and working yourself up and all those kinds of things that go along with the sport and just things that you'll find in life. With the transfer portal, guys can leave too easy. And I think that on some instances, that might be okay, but in the grand scheme of things, I don't like it. I don't think it's good. And I could go on and on forever and ever on this subject, so I didn't touch every part of those two subjects. But I'm not a fan of either NIL in its present state and the fact that a guy could just leave your school and be immediately eligible to play.
Nick Aliotti with us, former Oregon defensive coordinator. You know, it's just I think they're going to have to – Congress is going to have to step in because it's going to have to be federal now. And I think it's going to take some time to correct. But, yeah, I don't like the direction it's going because one of the best things about college athletics was, you know, that it wasn't professional. And I'm all for kids getting something, but I don't like buying players. I don't think that was the spirit of things.
No, couldn't agree with you more, John. Like I said, I don't have a chance to explain myself fully in a 15, 20-minute interview, yeah. But the kids getting something, I'm okay with that. But there's got to be some kind of jurisdiction. There's got to be a limit, okay? There just has to be. And the way it is now, and I honestly have to admit, I don't even know all the rules and regulations and the collective and all this kind of stuff. I just don't like it. And then again, I piggyback with the transfer portal thing. Just too easy to run away from something. And I know there's going to be people out there say, well, coaches leave and all that kind of stuff too. So there's arguments on both sides. But just for the nature of college athletics, now you can buy your team because you're also buying them. Let's face it, when they go to the transfer portal, you're buying them. You're still off. I'll bet every kid in that transfer portal is looking at all the schools, and it still comes down to what can you do for me financially for me to come to that school. And the spirit of college athletics is not that. I just don't think it's that, and I hope it doesn't get any more out of hand than I already think it is.
At the scrimmage, I saw Eric Armstead, a guy that you coached. You've coached a bunch of really good defensive players over the years, including Haloti Ngata and DeForest Buckner and Armstead and others. Got me thinking about Kayvon Thibodeaux. You've had a chance to watch him. I'm not as excited about Kayvon at the next level as some other people. I didn't like some of what I saw last year. You can compare him maybe to some guys you coached, but what did you see when you saw Kayvon Thibodeaux on the field?
When you see Kayvon Thibodeaux on the field, you know he can rush the quarterback. Okay? That's the first thing you see. But I like to look for consistency. He's not an overly big young man, and he's going to go in the first round because the NFL is always looking for pass rushers. But he's going to be going up a better offensive lineman week in and week out. And B, I'm not so sure I saw many plays where I would say he took on a block at the line of scrimmage in the run game, got off the block, and made a lot of plays that way. And to be an every down player, you have to be able to do those things. Now, pass rushers, always looking for him. Does he have a good quick step? Get off the ball and get after him. The best game I saw him play, in my opinion, was Cal last year. I thought he was very, very disruptive. But then there were other games he disappeared. And to me, to be an elite guy, he got to show up every weekend. So, good player. He'll go early because of his pass rush skills. If I'm being totally honest, to me, there's a few holes or warts, for lack of better words.
Yeah, because I compare him to a guy like the guy that I thought was really disruptive and took on blocks and got off blocks was DeForest Buckner in your time. You know, when you talk about the defensive lineman that you coached in your era, who was the most disruptive or maybe the best?
Without a doubt, Haloti Ngata. Lodi Nada was a guy that can do the things we were talking about. And he could rush the quarterback from a different vantage point, up the middle, knock a guard back or a center back, and get in the quarterback's face. But Lodi Nada took on blocks, could hold the point, get off the block, and make a tackle. Those, to me, are you know, now he's a defensive tackle, where Kayvon Thibodeau is a defensive end. But still, you have to be able to do that at a time, and I didn't see a lot of that. Now, I don't want to sit here and disparage and rip the young man, but that's, I like giving honest answers. I don't like giving homer answers. I am a duck to a large degree, but to me, like I said earlier, there are some questions in other parts of this young man's game.
All right, for dinner tonight, my grandmother's spaghetti sauce, Italian sausage, spaghetti. That's what we're serving over here. What is the Aliotti household go to when you talk about pasta and Italian food?
Well, you got to have red sauce first of all.
Yep.
Okay. And my wife, who learned from my mom, now knows how to do the sauce, and the red sauce is fabulous. I'm a big penne or rigatoni guy with the red sauce, because I like the big noodles al dente, nice and not undercooked, but firm enough. And then the meatballs that she makes are incredible. Similar to what you're talking about tonight, making my mouth water, because pasta is something I can eat every single night without question.
I love it. Aliotti, I appreciate you, man. Thank you for coming on and giving us some of your time.
You're a good man, John. Have a good evening.
Nick Aliotti, Pac-12 Network analyst, man of the world. Leave it here. You got the BFT statewide. We're going to play Punch It Audio coming up.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
That's very funny. Very funny. See? See what happens? I say this with my own kids. I'm very interested when my kids draw a photograph or draw pictures of the family. Ask your kid to draw a picture of the family. Unsolicited. And then look and see how they draw you. Are you normal sized? Are you larger than life? Do they draw you like tiny in the background? Are you smiling when they draw you? Yeah, that's when you find out really where you stand with your kids. Have them do it. Do the exercise. You don't need to be like a therapist or child psychologist. Just say to your kid, hey, here's a blank piece of paper. Draw your family. And then sit back and watch the show. See where you are in the hierarchy. Do you make the picture? Is the family dog the most important person in the picture? Pay attention to that. It's happening now on this radio show with that little get back liner. Well done. Whose idea was that, by the way?
I have no idea.
It's well done. We're going to play some Punch It Audio. I thought Nick Aliotti was good. By the way, best interview on today's show. Connor Letourneau was great in the 3 o'clock hour. Mark Reimers, the kid from the KEZI video, was fantastic for about 10 minutes in the 4 o'clock hour. But I thought Nick Aliotti was the best interview. Do I have that right?
I think you do. I think he gave very honest answers. When you asked about Kayvon Thibodeau, he could have just said he's a monster product and I can't wait to see him in the NFL. And a lot of people who join radio programs do say that, but he gave an honest answer. I like how he said, I'm a duck, but I'm also a truther. Like, he did not give us any BS. Similar to Nate Costa, he gave a lot of honest answers about the quarterbacks as well.
I'm not sold on Thibodeau either, only because I watched Lodi Nada, I watched Igor Olshansky, I watched Eric Armstead and DeForest Buckner, and I'll be honest, like, Armstead was not on the level in college that DeForest Buckner, certainly not Lodi Nada, even in Igor Olshansky, he wasn't on that level as far as disruption, but Armstead had, you know, he had the size, and, you know, the Niners pick him early in the first round, and I get why he's had success, but with Thibodeau, I kind of feel like Thibodeau's either going to get to the NFL and disappear, or he's going to get to the NFL and he's going to become a very situational pass rush star. And there's a place for a guy like that in the NFL, but I don't know if he's an every down player. And I say that because I look at his performance at Oregon in the last two seasons, and I go, he had some really nice moments. Most of them were pass rush moments. He also had games that were important games in Oregon's schedule last year. The three most important games were week two against Ohio State, November at Utah, and then the Pac-12 championship game against Utah. He was 0 for 3. He didn't play in the Ohio State game. He didn't show up in the first game against Utah. And he barely showed up in the Pac-12 championship game, to the point where everybody who left the Pac-12 championship game left the game talking about, you know, not Kayvon Thibodeau, but you know, they were left that game talking about Devin Lloyd, and went, he was the best player on the field, because he was fantastic. And I have a, you know, Devin Lloyd's going to have a nice NFL career. I have no doubt about it. He's not going to be picked in front of Kayvon Thibodeau. But some of this is because of the position that Thibodeau plays. Let's be real. Where are we projecting Kayvon Thibodeau in Thursday's draft? What is the over-under on where Thibodeau goes in this draft?
Say 7.5, over or under there.
I would not pick him. If I were a general manager that wanted to keep my job, I would not pick him in the top 8 picks in this draft. So I would say over the 7.5, but I think some sucker is going to take him. But I think Kayvon Thibodeau has a chance to get somebody fired.
I think 7 might be the number for the Giants. I think he gets past the Jets at 4. We hear he's going to go to one of the Jets. Peter Schrager said they had a long interview with him before Easter Sunday. They like what they heard from him. The Jets have the 4th and the 10th pick in the draft, so he definitely doesn't drop below 10, in my opinion.
Yeah.
It's a case if he goes to 4, I doubt it, but I think he stays below 7.
And I think the Giants are picking at 5 and then 7.
Yes, yes.
If you have 2 picks in the first 7, I feel better about that, because I think you can miss and still go, hey, I saw his upside, because he has tremendous upside. But, you know, my hope is that he is filing away everything that's being said about him, and he's putting that chip on his shoulder, and he's going to show up, and he's just going to be, you know, Lawrence, the second coming of Lawrence Taylor in a New York Giants uniform. But my suspicion is he's going to be focused on his contract. He's going to be on his Instagram. He's going to be telling the world how great he is instead of showing the world how great he is. And I kind of think that's where Kayvon Thibodeau is going to end up. All right, we're going to play Punch It Audio after the break. You're going to get an update here. You got the bald-faced truth statewide on the BFT Radio Network.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.